Welcome to the Equality Conversation podcast with me, Joy Burnford. This show explores what we can all do to be an ally and champion gender equality at work. Achieving gender balance in the workplace isn't about fixing the women. It's about changing the system to ensure that everyone can reach their full potential. So if you're looking for insights, guidance, or advice on how to improve gender equality in your organisation, grab a cuppa, go for a walk, or escape for a while and join us for today's conversation.
This podcast is brought to you by Encompass Equality. We're the leading provider of practical solutions to advancing gender equality in the workplace and partner with organisations to support the attraction, retention and progression of women. We do this through research and consulting, leadership development programmes, talks and workshops and one-to-one and group coaching. To find out more and to download free tools and frameworks from the number one best-selling book, Don't Fix Women, visit EncompassEquality.com.
I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Julie Humphreys as my guest today. Julie is the Group Head of Diversity and Inclusion at Reach PLC and is also the host of the D&I Spy Inclusion Uncovered podcast. Julie joins me today to talk about her experience setting up a new dedicated D&I function at Reach and leading their diversity and inclusion agenda. Hello, Julie, and welcome to the Equality Conversation.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me.
It's wonderful to have you on the podcast. And as you know, I was on your podcast, D&I Spy, that you co-host with Natasha Whitehurst from Rolls-Royce. And it was wonderful to be on your podcast. And I'm delighted to be able to have you back on my podcast today. Tell me a little bit about your career in a nutshell and how you came to be at Reach.
So my career spans sort of, I suppose, 25 years or so in HR. I do feel particularly old at the moment when I say that, but I think it's a different world to when I started. And I think that's important that we just take stock sometimes. I'm no longer in HR. D&I is a strange old profession. Sometimes it sits in HR, sometimes it sits in marketing, sometimes in customer, predominantly in HR though. And previously I have been in HR as part of D&I, but I'm no longer part of that function because we have a separate function reporting to the CEO. That being said, I feel like I am still a fully fledged member of the HR community. I'm a huge advocate of all the work that the HR function does. I'm still a fellow of the CIPD. I still go and talk at sort of their exhibitions and their conferences. So I do feel still part of HR, and I feel HR is a massive part to play in D&I.
And you're a doctor as well. Tell me a bit about that.
I am. I'm a doctor.
So very grand.
It is. And do you know what? I'm so super excited at the moment because I've just been nominated or shortlisted for the Anglia Ruskin University Alumni of the Year. And I'm really pleased because I saw the other nominees yesterday, and there's an undergraduate and a master's graduate. And I just feel like I did my, and they're young, the other sort of shortlisted people. And I feel really proud. And I was tweeting that I'm okay that I did it in my 40s, that education's for any age. And it's something that I did it around the effect of children on women's careers. And it's something that was really important to me.
I didn't know that, Julie. I didn't know that's what you're...
Yeah, absolutely. And it was personal to me because I saw having children blow my career apart in my 30s. And I just thought, God, this can't be right. And that those, you know, that time of year, sort of about 15 years ago or 20 years ago, there was nothing to support working mothers. And I just thought, I just need to look more into this.
Yeah, it's crazy, really, isn't it, when you think about that? At least now things are starting to change on that front. At least people are sort of talking about it. It may not always be perfect, but it's,
Yeah, we can have the conversations, though. We couldn't even have the conversations. You know, I remember being so grateful to my manager of the time that allowed me out at 4 o'clock twice a week so I could get to pick the kids up by 6 o'clock at the end of, and I just think, I used to be so grateful, like cap in hand, going, please let me out. Yeah, it's a different world now.
Yeah, and you mentioned that magic word, line manager, because we're doing some research at the moment about the retention of women. And one of the key things that's sort of starting to come out is that the importance of line managers when it comes to things like childcare or menopause or some of the other factors that people might assume impact women's career. And it's not about having children. It's about how the organisation responds and supports those individuals. And it's so important. So coming back to you then, and when you joined Reach, there was no dedicated D&I function. So this is the role that you set up, and I'd love to hear more about that. And as you know, D&I sits in so many different places within organisations, doesn't it? And every organisation I speak to, I think people are a bit never really sure where it should sit. Or tell me a little bit about that and sort of how that role has sort of developed from when you took over.
So I've been with Reach for about 2.5 years now. So I was approached, I suppose, about 3 years ago, just after George Floyd had been murdered in the US, because at that time, you probably remember, a lot of organizations suddenly had to look inwardly and assess what they were doing around inclusion and if they had inclusive behaviors across their workforce, if there was any systemic racism. So not unlike other companies, Reach did the same thing. And they spoke to some of their employees. They got some groups together. One was around ethnicity, looking at racism. One was around sexual orientation and gender identity. Those employees spoke really eloquently and really honestly with the CEO and told him and the board that actually it needed to be a profession within Reach. There needed to be a function. It couldn't be done by the side of somebody else's desk, that we needed a strategy. So that's when I was contacted. I was super pleased to work with Reach because I report directly into Jim Mullen, who's our chief exec. So as you say, you know, we don't sit in HR as a function. We go right to the top. So I regularly report to the board. I have meetings all the time with Jim. And where we started from was, although there had been some really great practice across Reach, there was no cohesive strategy. So what I did immediately, I started in January 2021, and I immediately went out and spoke to 28% of our workforce. So that was over 1,200 people over the space of 4 weeks.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
It was actually busy.
It did. But also what I wanted to do was have those conversations myself. So I didn't ask a third party organization to come in and, you know, do the transcribing or, you know, give them questions to go and ask our employees. I wanted to do it personally. So it was really tiring, but it meant that I had such rich data and I wasn't asking like really difficult questions. I was asking simple questions about what is diversity? What is inclusion? Who should be leading the charge? Who should be, you know, championing it? What do you want to see? Like really simple questions. And interestingly, we repeat these questions every year now, just to see how far we're moving along. But what I found was that there was huge, huge confusion across the board about what diversity and inclusion is, to the point where the first thing that we did when we launched our strategy was to redefine what diverse inclusion is. So we've made it really simple. We've made it as diversity is who we are and inclusion is what we do. Really simple. It's repeated across everything we do.
I love that simplicity. I think we spoke about that before, and I think it's just so, it's so good to have that clarity around exactly what it is. It's a bit like the whole sort of equality versus equity piece as well, which has sort of cropped up a lot recently with International Women's Day, obviously. But yeah, having that simplicity is key.
I think you're right, because this is not rocket science, what we're doing. You know, you don't need a doctorate to do this. It is simply treating people fairly, with respect, and making sure people have equality of opportunity. You know, we don't need to overcomplicate it. And I think there's a lot of, you know, money making going on, unfortunately, you know, the last few years, where there are people who aren't particularly well qualified or well versed in what's supposed to happen. When it's so simple, you know, we just have to make sure, and you make a great point about line managers. That's generally the issue. That's definitely our issue here at Reach, is that the fact that we need to give our managers more support around the inclusion agenda.
And I think often you hear, when, you know, a lot of the time, it's not always, but, you know, male managers who don't necessarily feel comfortable about having conversations with women about sort of things that are potentially female, you know, about menopause, for example, or childcare. And it's really sad that I think, you know, men in particular are finding now that they're afraid to say anything because they're worried about what they, you know, if they say something, it's going to get them into trouble. And as you say, it's kind of creating these workplaces that are good for everybody. It's not about women's equality. It's about gender equality. It's about making sure each individual is treated with respect and sort of as a person, as a human being. And I think it's, as you say, it's so simple. And so many people get it wrong. It's like, it's just basic, you know, just treating people like human beings.
It is. And it's treating, you know, women sort of not as one homogenous group. I think that's really, really important that, you know, there's been a lot of discussion over the past few weeks because the gender pay gap reports have all been coming out. And, you know, and what you just see from a lot of organizations, you know, let's just throw loads of women into a development program or throw loads of women into, some mentoring. But actually, let's look at individual women and what their needs and requirements are rather than just, you know, throwing programs at people.
Okay. And I think, as you say, you know, women are not, you know, homogenous group and men aren't either. And I think often men get lumped into the sort of, oh, men are not doing this and men are not doing that. And actually, there are so many men who really want to be moving the dial on this. They're just a bit, they don't quite know what to do. And I think it's, we've got to engage with that.
Absolutely. When I was in the insurance industry, there was a lot of work going on there. And there's a group led by the wonderful Pauline Miller, who's at Dentsu now, but she was at Lloyd's of London at that point. And she created this.
I know Pauline.
Do you? She's wonderful, isn't she? She's a rock star of D&I.
Yeah.
And she created this group, this D&I group, that all the heads came together. And we put together a program for male allies. So across industry. So it was a space for senior people within many insurance companies to come together on a quarterly basis to talk about, you know, what they could do and to learn and to get support. And, you know, it's not a frightening thing. We need to, you know, take the fear out of it.
Yeah. And I think it's also about getting sort of men together in a room where they can have that safe space to talk about it and talk about themselves, not about, and I was chatting to somebody the other day and he was saying, you know, often my organization organises things for men to come along and see how they can be better allies to women, rather than men come along and talk about what's going on for you, what are the challenges that you're facing, you know, the mental health issues, or talk about some of the sort of things you're worried about saying, or those kind of things. Because I think often now everything's moved towards this, how can we help women, and the men are feeling, what about me? And I'm worried about my job, you know.
You're absolutely right. We've actually seen, since we've been doing more work around, you know, this inclusion is an action, that it's something that you actually have to do. It doesn't just happen by itself. We've seen our attendance by our male colleagues and managers at events that our networks put on, for example, or any training sessions, really increase. So more and more men are now coming and feeling more comfortable. And we just held one this morning, actually, on neurodiversity, and the predominantly were men. And of the people who were asking questions, it was the men again. So it's brilliant to see that they're feeling like they're a part of what we're doing here at Reach.
I really hope you're enjoying the conversation so far. I want to take a moment to tell you a little bit more about our mission at Encompass Equality. We're passionate about enabling the retention and progression of women in the workplace and sharing our knowledge to help support and inspire others. This podcast forms just a small part of what we do. So if you're struggling to retain senior women, or if you're not sure whether the initiatives you have are working, please do get in touch with us at encompassequality.com. We have a depth of knowledge and research that underpins all the work we do supporting our clients.
Coming back to the sort of the D&I function that you set up, you know, what factors should businesses consider if people are thinking, well, we haven't got any sort of professional function around this at the moment? You know, what should organisations be thinking about before implementing such a function? Obviously, resources are important in terms of people and budget, but, you know, anything else that people could think about, any sort of top tips?
I think you need to know where you want to get to. Often organizations panic and think, we need networks, because I hear everybody else helps having these ERGs, employee resource groups, or networks, and that often is helpful, but actually you need to understand what you're trying to achieve first of all. So I would definitely bring it back to basics. Look at what your beliefs are in terms of the company, what your principles are going to be, if you want to have a mission statement, then you can have a mission statement. Interesting, I'm just reading Simon Fanchel's new book around diversity dividends, and he's got some really interesting ideas about whether organizations should have mission statements and not around diversity. But we have at the moment, but I always love reading new books, so I always pick up some things. So I'm revisiting that at the moment. But the key is know where you want to be, and then look at what you need to do from that. So we knew we wanted to have a workforce that represented our readership, because we are, you know, a publishing organization. So we need to write articles and content that does sort of apply to as many people as possible. So we thought, well, how do we do that? And one of those things also, we looked at, can our employees be themselves? Can they be their authentic selves? And we found that they didn't have, for example, a safe space or a space that they could talk to each other or learn more or create awareness. So that's why we created networks. But we were very specific about why we created networks.
And you talked about some of the objectives when you started. And what's going on now for you, you know, 2 years on, 2.5 years on? What are your kind of more longer term objectives and how are you measuring that?
Yeah, so we've got a three-stage roadmap. So the first was building the foundations, which we've done, which took sort of about 8 to 10 months. And that was really the governance and the infrastructure and setting all these sort of, setting our stall out, I suppose. The next was building the momentum. And we're still in that phase. We're not ready for the third stage yet. It's what we're trying to do is really embed some of the, I don't say programs because I don't want it to feel like programs, but some of the initiatives, some of the activities, some of the groups that we've put together and just try to build on the progress that we've made. For 2023, we are really stripping out a lot of the excess sort of side stuff that we were tinkering with. We're refocusing. We have now three core priorities.
What kind of things? Well, I was going to say, what are the kind of things you're stripping back on?
Well, I'll say what we're doing first, and I'll say what we've stripped out. So, no, that's okay. So we've got, it's probably easier the way to say what, because what we're doing is we're refocusing our data. So we held a big data capture campaign 2 years ago, actually linked it to reward as well and compensation for all of our employees. So we're revisiting that campaign called Be Counted, and it was collecting demographic data. So we're looking at that again because we had a really high percentage participation rate. We had 87% of people, but we also had quite a high proportion of prefer not to says within that. So it takes it down to about 67, 70%, depending on what demographic we're asking about. So we're really focusing on that this time, this year. The next thing that we're focusing on is the managers piece. So I don't want to say we're not focusing on employees anymore, but what we were going to do was roll out our culture change program called Playing Your Part across the business. We've already shared it with board, exco, and our reach leader population. And we were this year going to move out to our employees. We're not ready for that yet. We are sticking with the managers for this year. We really feel like that's where our main gains are going to be. And then thirdly, our final priority is around early careers and outreach. Our prime sort of title, I suppose, is The Mirror, which does a lot of work around social mobility. And that's, we feel that that's where our core interest is as well as an organisation as Reach. So we're doing a lot and we've got a partner called Causeway and we're doing some really exciting work around early careers and outreach with them.
Fantastic. And as you say, every organisation is so different. You know, each organisation is so different in terms of objectives, and each, you know, each function is going to have a different set of priorities, aren't they? So, what can you tell me a little bit about some of the things you've taken away that you sort of stripped back on?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've taken away, as I say, the rollout of Playing Your Part to all colleagues, and that was because we wanted the managers to deliver those sessions. And we're not comfortable that we've given the managers enough support at the moment to authentically deliver them, because they're not training sessions. They're not, you know, just pick up a slide deck and away you go. They're very sort of independent, thoughtful and personal sessions that we wanted the managers to have with their teams. And, you know, we want to make sure that we've given them enough support to run those. So we're absolutely doing that. We had one-to-one coaching sessions with our exco, with external inclusion coaches, and we're pausing that for the time being. We're just giving our exco members now time to work on some of that stuff that they worked on their coaches the last 18 months. So we'll start picking that up again towards the end of this year. We are halting creating any new networks. Last year, we created Reach Family and Carers, and that was directly as a result of the Be Counted data. We saw we had a lot of carers across the business, so we asked everybody if they'd be interested. We don't run them. They have to be run by employees, and they step forward and are running them, which is brilliant. We've just started a sustainability network, and that's it. We're sort of closing the doors on anything new. We just want to, as I say, this is embedding what we're doing at the moment. It's not creating new stuff.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the things I'm hearing. People are trying to sort of slim things down, refine things, and not having groups for everything, because it ends up, there are so many things going on that people end up being invited to so many different things. And then you lose the focus a bit, don't you?
Yeah, we are now making sure that they're all collaborating with each other. So we don't want to see an event, for example, just about women. For International Women's Day, it's got to look at that intersectional piece. You know, let's also look at it from an ethnicity perspective or a disability perspective, sexual orientation, etc. So, yeah, we're really excited about what some of those collaboration pieces.
Fantastic. And what are some of the challenges that you're facing at the moment? You know, what's coming up for you this year?
I mean, the budget is always a challenge in D&I. It's not about return on investment, but it's about time that. If we're a profession, that we can prove our return on investment, I think, you know, and I am challenged at board when I go to show how we're impacting business performance. And I think, you know, a lot of my time is spent looking at how we can show that and looking at what doesn't give us, you know, great results, and let's move away from it. And I'm not just talking about, you know, pounds and dollars. You know, we have an inclusion index, for example. So not only do we look at the demographics of our employees, but we also ask them how included they are via a quarterly survey, which is live. It's rolling feedback for managers to use. So it's looking at that as well. And that's definitely business performance.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think ROI of all these things, I think it's, when it comes to gender equality, I think it should be quite obvious, because, you know, the cost to recruit, if somebody leaves, the cost to recruit somebody is immense at a senior level. It should be very easy, but it's not easy to kind of convince people that you need to spend a bit to then retain or, you know, keep those sort of people in the organisation.
Yeah, there's lots of reports. You know, there's a McKinsey report out recently around, you know, how many years it's going to be to before we get gender parity, etc. And lots of quite depressing reading, but nothing that's really coming out that is saying if you do X will or Y will happen. So we've just gone into partnership with HR Data Hub. We're one of their founding organizations to try and prove this sort of link between D&I and business performance. So it's a two-year project. There's other companies and Marks and Spencers and other big companies who are part of it as well.
Interesting. I look forward to hearing about that. Brilliant. Well, we're just coming up to our time, Julie. It's been an amazing conversation. Thank you. And before we finish, I'd love to know what your one tip would be for organisations who want to retain women and improve gender equality at work.
I think my one tip would be to treat women and everybody as individuals. That, for me, is key. Just because you're a certain age woman, for example, doesn't mean that you're going to experience the same as another person who's in the same organization of the same age. Particularly when I'm thinking like this is menopause, it's for older women, for the younger women, not everyone's going to have children. I think it's really important that we see women as individuals.
Totally with you on that. Thank you. So how can people find out more about you? And I guess the one thing would be to listen to your podcast. Tell people a little bit about how they can find out more.
Yeah, so we have a weekly podcast called D&I Spy. So you can just type that into wherever you usually get your podcasts. We're on all platforms, and they generally range from 30 minutes to 40 minutes a week and focus on one topic. So we have lots of different listeners across 32 countries at the moment. We're really pleased. Yeah, so we've got a great, great reach. And
excuse the pun.
Yeah, excuse the pun. But it's not just for HR people, it's not for D&I people, you know, it's for anybody who wants to understand a little bit more about a different topic. So we have a lot about language, about bias, about banter, and we have some very well-known people. We have authors, we have celebrities, and we have people who are working in the D&I field. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, and we're always open to any new subjects. So please, if you can have a listen, if you like what you hear, follow us. Maybe write a review and get in touch via the normal social channels and tell us what you'd like to hear about.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Jill. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been fab.
See you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that's it for this episode. If you like what you've heard, don't forget you can download the free tools and frameworks from encompassequality.com to get started and take action today, wherever you are on your journey.
It would also really make my day if you could spend a couple of minutes to rate and review the podcast for others. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on the next episode.